Okay, so we were still on the question of Pashna Ruba. Okay. So we had moved to the question. I tried looking at cognitosism to clarify what we were talking about. Yeah, it doesn't help. I mean, those have been apparently slightly clearer, but still somewhat ambiguous. So we'll have to leave that. So we were up to the question of what do you do on Pesach, right? Do we learn anything with Gemara in terms of the thickness of our matzahs? So the riff, as we've seen, says that what we learn from here has nothing to do with the thickness of matzah itself. It has to do with how much matzah you're allowed, how much you're, at least the way it's understood by the Ramban, is how much you're allowed to knead at once, right? He said it's the limitation how much you can knead at once, because if you knead too much, so then you won't have time to knead it and spread it out and bake it and do all that before it becomes chametz. But in terms of thickness, we don't learn anything from this Gemara. The Ritva and the Rashba, both in different ways, say that no, we actually do learn from here that you aren't supposed to make bread, which is matzah, which is overly thick, and that's why we make thin matzah. The Ritva had concluded that b'di'eved, it seems to be you can make it up to tefach. We do conclude, though, from this Gemara that you can't make it more than a tefach, but l'chatchila, he thinks you should make it even thinner than that. He doesn't say exactly how much, he doesn't know, but thin. And the Rashba as well says that the thinner you make it, the better. So we're up to 9, we're up to the Tur's discussion of this. So the Tur says as follows, Shira Isa, that's number 9, Shira Isa shel Pesach shel Lashon b'pam achas himem gimel beitzim v'chomash beitzim beinonim. So the amount that you can knead at once, like the Rif, is the Shir Challah, and it's 43 and a fifth eggs. V'chein yishar osa yimalei kli mayim yitin osa kli reikon v'yachan osa chomem gimel beitzim v'nachas achas v'achas v'mayim otzien kli amachzik osam hu shir hamida o yimalei kli mayim v'yara mayim menu l'kli acher. And then he explains how you measure 43 and a fifth egg, so he gives all types of displacement ways of doing it, right? Okay, fine. But okay. Gets into a whole way of measuring it, fine. Because of Rav Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Yehuda, Shazua Mide Dafel Rishonim, Shatinurem Ayuktanim, Vikol Mechash, Vikol Isha Lichamev Mel. Aval Tanurim Shalanu, Shen Gidolim. He says that was only true for them, they had small ovens. And therefore, if you knead it a lot, it's going to wait, right? Because you're going to have this small oven, and then you're going to need whatever, right? If you need too much flour, too much dough, so then you're going to be able to fit in what? One loaf, two loaves into the oven. You're going to have to wait, and you're going to have to put in more. And ours with these huge ovens, so knead whatever you want, and then, chick chock, you put in as many loaves as you can fit into your oven. So he thinks that even that limitation is not true. As long as you always can be, as long as you continue working the dough the entire time, but that wasn't the consensus. The consensus was that, in fact, we should limit how much you need at one time. But again, that's just in terms of how much you need. It doesn't affect how the bread matzah is actually made. Because of Rav Rabbeinu Yonah, and he said that many of the Balei Tosfos would even forbid eating it at all if you made more than that. Venirli lahasir, but I think that b'di'evit would be mutter. Miu ledas agonim shkosr shlechatzila en laniach ha'isa fil regach below esek. But there is a gonic position that you should constantly be working the matzah, which is what we do in matzah factories. And again, lechatzila en lachil l'shiosr midashir. So if that's the case, you shouldn't do more than this. Shir ad kanvel zeskim adoni avarash sal. The Tur, again, like the Rif, he brings slight machlokas in terms of what is the limitation on kneading, right? Is it 43 and a fifth shear of eggs, right, worth, or is it a little bit more if you have a bigger oven? It just depends on whether you're working it. But again, the Tur, unlike the Rashba and the Ritva, doesn't bring this notion that you have to limit how thick your matzah is, right? He just says that it's, it's a limitation in terms of how much you can knead at once.
The 43
to 5th might be of a measure, is that Omer or something? It's Challah,
it's the
Shir Challah.
Shir
Challah,
is it a measure of
Omer? It's a Shir Challah, I mean, that's what it is. It's five and a quarter, five and a quarter row of flour. And that's where it comes up. It's challah, right? It's the, you know, challah is, you know, the way you remember it, challah is the gematria of 43.
Cool.
Right, that's the... okay. Now, okay, so one of the things, I didn't put here, I just referenced it, is however you understand this. Let's say you understand it like the Ritva, right? That there is a there's limitation on matzah, but it's a tefach. Right? Or you understand like the Rif and the Tzur that there is no limitation, maybe even more than a tefach, can make matzah even thicker than a tefach. So this is one of the many, many raya that Zivotofsky and Greenspan bring, in that article I referenced at the end, that matzah traditionally was soft, right? Because you cannot eat matzah, which, right, try eating our hard matzah, which is, 3-4 inches thick, right? It's physically impossible. Now they know that historically, even in cultures that had soft matzah, they sometimes did have thick matzah, which was a tefach thick, but that wasn't for eating. That was for grinding up into matzah meal. But if you're talking about edible matzah, if it's a tefach thick, it must be that they have soft matzah. And they have many, many proofs for the fact that what we all know, that matzah used to be soft, right? We all know this matzah was soft. This is, again, you can read that article. It's a lot of fun. They do know that the proof that everyone thinks they know is not necessarily a good proof. Right? The proof everyone thinks they know that matzah is soft, what used to be soft, is korech. Right? It's how could you wrap things if matzah is hard? And they said it's not a good raya for two reasons. One is because Rabbi Hananel, who did presumably have a soft matzah, but you couldn't prove in this sugya, thinks that korech doesn't refer to the matzah, it refers to the maror. Right, the maror you wrapped around, you know, it's like, you know, like sushi, right? You could have the rice on the outside, you could have the seaweed on the outside, right? So they had, according to Rabbi Hananel, the korech is the maror on the outside, is the leaf, and the leaf obviously you can wrap. So that obviously wouldn't prove that the matzah is soft. Also, korech doesn't just mean wrap; it could mean surround. But there are other proofs, like this one, that matzah clearly was at some point soft. Like it could be a tefach thick, and especially according to the Rif, who seems to reject even that. Right, that maybe it can even be thicker than a tefach, for sure. If it can be thicker than a tefach, obviously, you know, it has to be soft, otherwise you can't eat it. Okay, so how do we pass again? So Shulchan Aruch says it follows in 10.
So,
no.
The carbon nachas, didn't they fold them? There was a two-folding process.
In the...
I forgot the details, but they would take a fold them twice before they would break them up.
Well, then that's when you're still making it.
Oh.
There's all types of things you're doing. But once it's made,
right?
I mean, there's many, many riots for this, right? They point out that even going far into time, right? Even in Ashkenazi lands, they sell soft ones. Like, you know, one of my favorites is the Afikoman proof. Is that the Marshal, I think it was, discusses that a good place to hide your or keep your Afikoman is a
pillow.
Yeah, it's in the pillow that you're leaning on. And they're like, well, that ain't gonna work if you have, you know, good luck with your matzah. If it's hard matzah, try putting it on your pillow and see how many pieces you have of it. If it's a soft laffa-like thing, okay, so you could do that.
It was a different number of pieces every year. That's what my father did.
Physically. You said you had that urn. So physically, he actually made a matzah that's a tefach. You said last week. You said there was someone who was experimenting.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that yet. I do have that. That's at the end of these verses. So that's on Lechem Afanim. But we'll get that.
I don't know how to cook all the way through a tefach, especially with the.
So that's what he's going to discuss. So he actually does think the Lechem Afanim itself is more of an edible cracker, which is tefach. Like, I'm not quite sure what it means. I can't even imagine it, but he does describe it somehow. But we'll see that in a minute. So let's just stick to the Pesach thing first. Like I said, if you want to look at the article, it covers everything there, all the interesting stuff, all the Eruv stuff. What?
Pictures in the article that show you exactly what it looked like.
They do have some pictures, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
They have pictures from Ahgazo. They have all those things.
50 years ago, they used to have.
Did they make it themselves?
Of course they did. Yeah, of course they made it.
Those two always.
Yeah, I mean, they said they were surprised, you know. Now, one of the proofs that hard matzah is old, not as the only matzah, but as a matzah, is the Eruv proof.
Right.
Is that as early as the Gonic period, they do what we do, which is they would make Eruv Chatzeros for a full year, or even for 3 or 4 years, and they would just leave the matzah there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, soft matzah does not last 3 to 4 years. So it's clear that they also were aware of the possibility of making hard matzah and did do it, but it wasn't what they normally ate. It was what they made special for Erev Chatzira. Right. Though he does have a discussion there about the Yemenites. Right. The Yemenites also say that they used matzah for 3 months at a time, and they were like, okay, how? Right, matzah, they used soft matzah. They always used soft matzah. How could you leave it for 3 months?
Well,
so then they said
that... You have chalot matzot,
So he experimented, right? Because no one says they made hard matzah in Tayman, so they actually made a soft matzah, and they hung it outside in arid weather, like in Israel, Middle Eastern weather, and it dries up, obviously, but it doesn't spoil.
Mm.
It actually lasted for 3 months. They left it there for 3 months, and they took it, and they said, if you put it in a dip, which is how people used to eat it, you put it in like hummus or something, it actually becomes soft and edible and not moldy. Even soft matzah, like a pita, for 3 months. I'm not about to try that. It won't work in Canada. I mean, not in this weather for sure. So, anyway.
Talk to the raccoons.
Yeah, that too. Okay. So Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Ein loshen lepesach is a gedola mishir chala. Right, so we accept the position of the Rif. That we limit how much we need on Pesach at a given time to the Shir Chalash. Mem Gimel Beisim, Vachomesh Beisa, Beinonim, Vahu Yisaron. V'chein Yisharo, So Yolami Kli Mayim, V'yara Mayim, V'menu L'Kli Yachir, V'akach Yitin, Mem Gimel Beisim, V'yachir, V'al Mayim. You need a search sheet?
Yeah.
You have one?
Oh,
yeah. Sorry. There you go. No problem.
He was still in the dark.
Okay. We're on source 10. Right? So we do accept, first of all, the limitation of the Rif, in terms of how much you can need. And again, he brings this whole displacement and the thing and how you figure out how big something is. Fine. The Rama says, V'lo yitchak ha-kemach. V'midah dimkein lo yolush. Yafen, don't squeeze it too much in, because if you squeeze it too much in, right, you're not going to be able to knead it well, right? If you have a small little bowl and you're trying to knead it, right, and you have too much flour in there, you want to be working it at all times, right? If it's stuffed in there, going to take you forever, you're not going to be able to get the stuff on the bottom, so don't do that, right? We want you to be constantly working it as much as you can. And if you're making it for the mitzvah, you should say l'shem mitzvah. Okay, so beis and lash yosher mishir zem mutter b'di'evad, but even right, l'chadchilo we paskin like the Rif, but b'di'evad, like the Torah said, it is mutter, right? The while the Rif might be machmir, the Chochmei Tzarfas might have been Oser, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that while l'chadchilo we paskin like the Rif, and we limit how much we need at one time on Pesach. If you don't, so then it's fine. The Mishnah Berurah says why in number 11. Mutar b'di'avad afil over v'las yoser b'meizin, even if we did it on purpose. U'vishah shir mil v'lishah so kodem shiatchilo ha'ozer m'saya v'shah saricha tiddu kam achronim t'varnal yesh lasar gam b'di'avad. But he said, but most of the achronim say that if you leave it sitting for 18 minutes, right, shir mil, so then it will be oser. Because technically 18 minutes is only if you're not working it. But since we say that when it's more than a shir challah, you can't work the whole thing. So if you have too much but you manage to get into the oven within 18 minutes, fine. If it's a small amount and you're working it. So technically, if you're working the whole thing 18 minutes, it's still not chametz, because as long as you're working it, it doesn't become chametz. But if it's too big of a shear and it's more than 18 minutes, so then he says, b'di'evad, most of the acharim say, right, once you have that combination of factors, it's usher, because we assume that if you have too much dough that you're kneading, and it's just one person, so you're working it, you're trying to work it for 18 minutes, but it's too much, so you're not actually doing it, we assume that you didn't get to the bottom of the thing, so then it would be usher. So havale kimunachat b'li'ezek klaus, it's if you're not working it at all. And therefore, many of the acronyms say that if you have that combination of factors, then it would be totally utter. Ve'yesh poskin shekilu b'ikar dinze b'yameinu l'dayin l'chashu chamin b'zeh rak b'yamezishan v'echad hayalash v'orech v'yorchen b'yadayin b'liyamelin shal eitz v'yorah mishtah harbe v'gam t'rimay v'tanim. He said some people are even more makel, and they say this whole limitation was only in their days, and they had small ovens, and they had, and it would take a long time before you got everything in. Right, where it just would take so long, because it's such a small oven, that things would just be sitting around. And that's why Chazal didn't want you kneading so much. I'll be on menush often matzos by ozen rabbin. But now we all have help at home. Okay, sure. At least we make matzah. We have a lot of people around. The gam tani reyum gedolim and we have these huge ovens. The lashon varochan veofen bezrizus gadol. We're always working it. So then ein lahachmer afil belashon b'midah gedolim v'amachas. So then you're allowed even lachachila to use bigger amounts. Shavavadal yavali dechimot tva olam nagul lachachila kadeazu. And he says that is the minog, not to leave it more than 18 minutes, but to allow people lechatchila to need a lot at the same time, which is true, right? You go into a matzah factory, right? Our minog is, you know, at least when you have 100 people working on it, right? So the 18 minutes, we're very machmir, right? We put it in like 3 minutes, right? The time, we're not making long. But this notion that lechatchila, you should only need a little bit, so we say that's only if you're doing it by yourself in your private oven. But if you're doing this big, massive oven with a lot of people working on it, right? So yeah, so sure, need a bunch of flour. I mean, you think about these matzah factories, sure, it doesn't matter how much flour and dough you put in there, right? You're dividing them 100 people. It's this huge assembly line, and they're all, you know, kneading it and saying, l'shem matzah's mitzvah, l'shem matzah's mitzvah, and getting the oven. So amounts don't matter, right? In the end of the day, it's going to be in the oven in 3 minutes, right? You know, it's always fun doing this, right? I mean, I assume at some point you did it, right? You know, everyone does it at some point. Usually it's like a Chabad. You know, somewhere.
Yeah,
the Chabad here, right? Yeah. I've done it at not Chabad. Those are, you know, like Chabad, you know, like they, you know, they've gotten used to like inviting people in. But we, in Fuchs Mizrahi, like in Cleveland, they have the school at night becomes a matzah factory for like the month before Pesach. And it's, you know, so I went once, I escorted Rav Meidan to Cleveland. He was giving a series of Pesach Shirim, and we can't, you know, the yeshiva can't let him fly by himself in America because his English is almost non-existent, and he's, you know, he's very excitable. He yells a bit, and, you know, and he's, whatever. So, like, you know, it's not good in airports. You know, he's, like, coming from the Middle East, and he's, you know, has this long beard and looks sort of, you know, and looks a bit like, you know, he could be, you know, from...
Cleric.
Yeah, exactly, a cleric, and he screams a bit, and, you know, he's a bit intense, and, you know, whatever, and, you know... He's missing part of his foot because he kicked a bomb. Like, you know, he has all the scary thing going on. So so I escorted him to Cleveland. And but so the guy said, you know what, can we open it for you special? You know, a late round, like, you know, after we gave Shiram, like 10:30 at night. So we all go. And like you say, you know, it was like just like, I don't know, 10 of us, you know, and Ramadan rolls up his sleeves, you know, Shem Matzah Mitzvah, Shem Matzah Mitzvah. You know, he moves very quickly, right? So we're making a lot, right? We've got it down to a science. So that we are make, obviously not the time. We're much more machmer than they are. Shavad lo yavli chemot, because never going to. Vano lam nagu lachatchila kadeh. That's what we do. Vem limchos biyadam achar sheish lam amal lismo. Because that's what we do. Mikol malkom kol yorei shamayim yer lachmer kadeh rishon. He said, even though that's true, you shouldn't do it. Af yameinu. Vrav yishuvim ktanim, especially in small places. Shein lam itaskim harbe bivad eish li zar shalol yosh esh mishir am bevorkan. So I just know, I'm just, you know, the truth is maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in these matzah factories they don't. Maybe I'm just thinking that they're all doing it, you know, a lot at the same time. But if everyone has their own, you know, dough that they're doing, I guess theoretically each of them might have less than a shechal. I'm not actually sure. Okay, but he says, b'dieved, you definitely can be somech as long as you have a lot of people working on it and you're moving it along fast. It's fine. L'chadchila, he wants you to be machmer. Kazva poskim ki kabdina shalosh yosem mishir zeh. And then he says a parenthetical point is that in terms of brachot, be careful, right? Because if you're doing exactly shir challah, right, that gets a bit dangerous because, you know, if it's a little bit more, you'll be chayv in a bracha. If it's a little bit less, you'll be pater from a bracha. So, you know, forgetting the Pesach issue, you know, for bracha issue, you know, maybe do a little bit less, right? Because if you're trying for exactly the right amount, it might be just a sliver less, and then it's a bracha vatala. So, but that's a second. That's a sort of an ancillary point. Okay. So that's in terms of the kneading. What about the thickness? How do we paskin in terms of the thickness of it? So, like the Ritva, in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin ein osen bevezach pas ava tefach. We do paskin the other reed as well, which is that you should not make matzah more than a tefach thick. But again, that's the limitation, is that the tefach.
Was that about 3 to 4 inches?
About 3 to 4 inches, yeah. Again, and since Shulchan Aruch accepts the read of the Ritva, hence it's very well. Think about it. It's thick if you're thinking hard matzah. If you're thinking You know, bread, you know, think about it, you know, challah could be, you know, like these fancy big challahs, you know, but even a standard bread, you know, what is 4 or 5 inches thick? It's not a, you know, how much is a slice of bread? 6 inches thick, right? Like, it's not, when it's soft bread, big deal, right?
Our difficulty is trying to imagine that you have things 3 inches thick without it being chametz ready.
Right.
That's our...
Right, hanami, and
that's... My difficulty is...
Right, so it's not going to be fluffy. It's going to be soft, but...
Right, it's going to be soft. Right. It's going to be fluffy, right? Obviously, if it's fluffy, then it's chametz, right? That's the whole point. It ruins, right? It's going to be soft. It's going to be more like, I don't know, a very... It's like a more of a wrap consistency, like a very thick wrap consistency. I mean, it's also a bit hard for me to imagine, but, you know... Okay. You know, whatever it is. Okay.
Okay, just...
Yeah.
Question to the doctor here. What is easier to digest? The hard matzah or the soft matzah?
I don't even know what the soft matzah is.
Like. Soft matzah. It's a soft matzah. You know.
Because it has more residues, what you're saying, or something.
I'll give you the Al Regal Zachal's version of the of whether Ashkenazim can eat this.
Which is where I was going to, by the way.
Right. The Al Regal Zachal's version of it is okay, I'm going to give you the summary of this article, right, very quickly. What they prove is that not only was matzah soft, but it was soft for a very long time, even in Ashkenaz. How did we get to hard matzah? So the simplest understanding is that, as we already saw in the Ritva, there was this notion that even though you could make thick matzah up to a tefach, it's better to make it thin. Right? It's better to make it thin. And Ashkenazim specifically accepted upon themselves a minhag to make it as thin as possible. Now, that didn't mean hard, it just meant thin. But as we made it thinner and thinner, now what happens? The thinner it gets, and the hotter the oven gets, right, because we're always trying to keep away chametz, slowly gets harder and harder and harder, and then it becomes totally hard when we master it with the machine. Right, because the machine, you can make it so thin and make it so fast that it just becomes hard, right? And it's always hard. And that's really how we got to it. But they point out that it's really very late that even Ashkenazim had exclusively hard matzah. It really is, the last 300 years.
The article is 100 years ago.
Yeah. So they said 200-300 years, it becomes like more as you get towards the machine. Well, 200, not 300, 200 years, right, as the machines are coming. But they said it's not till, even the Mishnah Berurah is still aware that in Ashkenaz there are softer matzahs. It's really like Manischewitz when like things stop. Right, because they have patents, they hold like patents on this. Right, they got it down to a science, and then like it sort of disappeared, and that was basically it. So can Ashkenazim have soft matzah? So Shechter says, of course you can. You know, again, he doesn't give a hechsher to any specific one. Right, there was a whole controversy in Australia where some people tried to say, oh, Rav Shechter says soft matzah is good, so our soft matzah must be good. And he said, no, I never said your soft matzah is good. I have no idea if your soft matzah is good. And some people who went to the plant said, no, their soft matzah is chametz. Fine, right? That's a different story, right? You can get good soft matzah. I mean, I talked to the rabbi of Magen David, or the Sephardi Shul on Bainbridge or whatever it is. And he said, first of all, you can't really buy soft matzah here. And sometimes it gets shipped in, but he said he got a shipment at some point, and he brought it to, I think, Rav Asayag. Asayag just looked at it, he opened it up, he said, it's chametz, like there's still flour on it, right? Like, so you have to do it right, but theoretically, if you have one with a good hechsher, Rav Shechter says you can have it. The other extreme, Rav Yashiv is quoted, again, I can't find this in a primary source, but in this controversy in Australia, he was quoted by the Rabbanut of Victoria to say that it was usur, and the minag Ashkenaz to have thin matzah also meant that we have a minag dafka to have hard matzah. Rav Asher Weiss has hedges, and he's like, on the one hand, it's clear that matzah was soft, and the minag of Ashkenazim to not have soft matzah doesn't seem to really exist. It seems to be about thin matzah. So you shouldn't have thick matzah, but like a thin lafa would be fine. On the other hand, I'm not convinced that that's true. Maybe there is a minhag, I'll teach start with mecha. So he's like, look, all things being equal, I would tell you not to, because I'm not totally convinced it's fine, but if anyone has any digestion problems, so have it, because, you know, that's going to allow you to do the mitzvah, it's going to allow you not to have problems. It's better than egg matzah, for sure, right? Egg matzah has serious halachic problems in terms of being yotzei, in terms of all types of things, matzah ashira, right? This has much less problems. So that's basically the three positions that you got. You know, I'm not poskening for you, but I would clearly have it. The only reason I haven't had it is because all the Sephardi people I ask say that realistically, it's not doesn't taste good. Because traditionally, the way it was made was that people had their private ovens and they made it fresh every day, so it was great. But now, hard matzah never gets stale. But soft matzah, imagine if you're buying 2-3 week old pita. Well, that's what this is. They sell it, you buy it, it's a fortune. It's like $28 a pound. And like, and you buy it frozen and like you defrost it and put it in the oven. And like, all my like Tamani friends say they don't even bother because unless you're making it fresh, what is worth the $28 for something that doesn't even, it tastes like 3 week old pita, like, you know, which is like freezer burn, like, you know, fine. But theoretically, if you want to make it yourself and you know what you're doing, which is a lot of ifs, right, you can do it. Okay, that's the summary of this. You can look at the article, and they don't have the halakhic stuff at the end, but if you look at my share online, I put it all there. I can send it to, I'll send it in my next email if you want. You can look at the sources inside. I'm fine. Okay. So again, in terms of thickness, Shulchan Aruch accepts that read that we saw in the Ritva already, that we are limited to a tefach. Fine, that does seem, that emerges a very plausible read of our Gemara. Mishnah Berurah says, Pasava tefach, dikshi ava kol kach yishloch o shem lo yishlot chom ma'ish. The problem is, if it's too thick, or the reason we pasken this way, and, you know, is because if it's too thick, you know, the heat may just not penetrate the inside, right? You know, like you have challah sometimes, the middle of it is still raw dough, right? You don't want that in on Pesach, that's a serious problem. So we don't want it to be too thick, so we can limit it to 3-4 inches. Okay, fine. But he said there are many poskim who say that it should try to be smaller, which is again what the Rashba said, and the Ritva says you should do lechatchila. Ubediavad and kvar afa, but he says if you already did it, so yesh matir nafilu b'ava tevach. Some say even if it's tevach, it's fine. V'yesh ostrin, some say it's oster if it's at a tevach, right? Tevach is that questionable part. Aval bepachos mi tevach ein laser b'diavad, right? So he said, right, you have some who say that even a tevach, you know, technically a tevach is fine. Okay. If it's exactly a tefach, some people say it's also, some people say exactly a tefach is fine. Under a tefach, Bidiyevet thinks it's for sure fine. Lechatchila, he thinks that you should try to bake it thinner. Again, this is the Minhag Ashkenaz, but even many of the Sfaradim.
Is it an arbitrary measure, or is it based on something?
It's on the, again, it's based on the assumption
based
that...
Based on the Lechem Panim, is that why?
I mean, that's where we get it from, but
because
the...
You know, what's the difference, whether it's tefach or two tefachim, it doesn't...
Well, right, so he says, the scientific reason is because you don't want it to be so thick that you end up having, you know, dough in the middle,
right?
Where we get it from, yeah, we model it, you know, it seems
right.
to be on the Lechem Panim.
And do an experiment.
Right, of course. And, you know,
right.
this, you know,
okay,
as you know, as we learn from Rabbi Yirmiyah, right, or, and Rabbi Zeir, they always ask these questions, right, as, you know, is it exactly that much? And the answer
right.
is yes. Kol mitzvos chachamim kachi. Right, that,
okay.
You know, you need an amount. Okay. How much? Okay, you know. So we pick an amount. We call Malcolm Kol Shiava. He says, but if it is really thick, right, if it is thick, yesh l'ayin v'sochem nevez yafav l'nizchamta, you do have to check. Right, he says if it is a tefach thick, so because there is that possibility of you know raw dough in the middle, you do have to check before you eat it, right? Which makes sense, right? You gotta check, but technically it works. Okay, fine. In the Ber Lacha, he summarizes the sugya and he says, "Ein mishnah berurah v'zin zeh tika mechaber mirucham ein beis Yosef ein mo mevram shemegamgem mikar din zeh because of the shmita poskim shmami nadas shilay namas ganesh atavatava hainu pas miruba v'vas ava mamish leka shum yisura." Mogen Avram says, this is not clear, because as we saw, right, while the Ritva thinks that we accept both the limitation on kneading and the limitation on size, right, the Rif only mentions the limitation on kneading, doesn't mention a limitation on size at all. So Mogen Avram says, very nice, Shulchan Aruch accepts the read of the Ritva, that we also limit the thickness to a tefach. But even that's not clear. The Mogen Avraham says, who said? Maybe the Maskana of the Gemara is we only limit how much you're supposed to knead at a time, and we don't care how thick it is. It could be 10 tefachim. Again, practically, you have to make sure that it doesn't become, you know, chametz in the middle, but theoretically, it could be thicker than a tefach. Ve'enokin, v'shas mukh, the lo kahadar Maskana ma'atzakad v'rushay ava mamish. But then he says, nah. It seems like the Ritva is right? That it's not that the Gemara rejects, and this is what we already saw in the Gemara last week, when the Gemara rejects the Ava Tefach, is it rejecting it as pshat in our sugya or as a halacha at all? So the Ritva assumes, and this is what the Mishnah Berurah says, the Shulchan Aruch is clearly assuming, is that when the Gemara says that we're, the issue at hand of pas meruba is not about the thickness of a matzah. It's not rejecting that there is such a halacha. It's just rejecting that that's the machlokes that we are talking about here. But there is such a shita, there is such a position that it can't be more than enough. That is, that remains true. So when Avram says you could read the Gemara as a total rejection, in which case you're allowed to have thicker matzah. But as the Ritva notes, and Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, there's no reason to reject that halacha totally, even if it's not the issue at hand in this machlokas. And that's what he says. The Sagar that Rav Avam Mamash, Al Mishim Kushes, Rav Yosef, the less one of the Fetera, Rav Avam, Yilechem upon him, the shiny awesome, of his reason, O Tamim, Ayin Sham. Right? The Gemara, just because of all types of reasons, said that's not what we're talking about. Vim Kain Adrav Esher, Dafil, Pogos, Mitevach, Eno Mutar. But he said, if that's the case, it could be the opposite, right? Like the Rajba. Right, that right. You have three ways of going in Gemara. Either we accept the Tefach, right, which is not the interpretation of our Gemara, or you totally reject that Gemara and say it could theoretically be even thicker than Tefach, or you reject the Heter of a Tefach, right, and say the like the Rajba, that we reject that there's anybody who says it could be a Tefach, it has to be even thinner than a Tefach. Right, those are the three possibilities. So he says you could go in any of them. The Chemuch Shom Berashi, the Gamal Kana Lo Kaha, the Beikar Adin Ayin Shom. He says, and he just goes through different shito that read this. And then he quotes all the Rishonim who say it should be thinner, and he quotes the Ritva, quoting the Ra'ah, that it can't be a tefach. But he doesn't know how thin it can be, and therefore he should make it thinner. And the Maram Chalava, who says it should be even thinner than a tefach, let's skip down to the MS, right? Here's all the summary that we've shown him to the MS, right? It's like, I don't know, 10 lines from the bottom of it? Three words from the end of the line. He says, the MS, Parasigul, the Mogen Avram, Kamachronim, many of the Achamari pushed back to the Mogen Avram, Ayim B'Sever Allah, Chabrura, Be'er Agrava, Vechem Peri Chadash, So you said lahalacha. The pre-chadash says it has to be. It can't even be a tefach. We don't paskin in Shulchan Aruch. We're more machmir. It has to be thinner than a tefach. Most of the achronim paskin that add a tefach, it's mutter at least for the eved. We paskin like Shulchan Aruch. Okay, but the ritva, according to the Ra, says really you should make it thinner. Zelashono kevan. The pictim in tefach la okmulam gemar shira achrina la tira listen la meva pas avaklal vizeo shenago olam lasas matzah shachov adaka ma de naka chova mishum daaz bin shmir yisir lachen zihirin lasas rakik and dakin avol bishem en adin afilu einen dakin mutar kol shen avin mikol mamu esher dizi avad lo asura tefach adkel nashono umer zarua mashmud lo psika levaze afilu biyoser mitefach lo brira leilesor the avad radi yom zarua is ensure that even more than tefach asur b'mitzvot matzahs avos yoser mitefach asur. Right, so you have the Or Zarua who says that maybe a tefach is only lechatchila, but the evidence could be more than a tefach, meaning we reject the Gemara entirely. It could be that we reject the Gemara all the way in the other direction, like some of the Chachmei Svard, and say it has to be thinner than a tefach. Or we accept the Gemara and just say that it can be up to a tefach. Those are the three possibilities. Right? Shulchan Aruch says tefach. Right, or Zeruah says more than tefach. Ulamaita, what is Mishabura paskin? Nira to the Yosef mitefach yesh lasar b'diavad. Me'achasher ritva b'shem ra'at chochek b'apalchon mitefach. More than a tefach, he says, we reject, just like Shulchan Aruch, because the ritva doesn't like it. Right, only the Zeruah likes it. Chema tadi b'vigde yesher shoser b'diavad. Lo kushlus Yaakov shehekel b'zeh b'diavad. Right, so lahalacha, what do you get? The Shvus Yaakov. Possibly there was a ruah that we totally rejected our Gemara. You can even make matzah which is thicker than a tefach. Shulchan Aruch paskins, like the simple read of our Gemara, there is such a rule. Tefach is the limit. Maybe not lechatchila, you should try to make it thinner, but definitely a tefach is fine, b'di'eved. And that's how most of the achronim do paskin. Lechatchila, the minag ashkenaz, based on the minag that the Ritva already brings, is to try to make it thinner, because it could be that we totally rejected the heter of up to a tefach, and therefore we don't know how thin you're supposed to make it, so we try to make it thinner. And it was this third opinion, right, this notion that even if it's technically okay at a tefach, that we always try to make it as thin as possible, that Zivotofsky and Greenspan argue, led to our eventual hard matzahs, because we kept making it thinner and thinner and thinner and baking faster and faster and faster. But again, lahalacha, that line in the Gemara, which says that matzah can be a tefach, right, it either is rejected totally, lekula or lechumra, right, the Shvus Yaakov or Zeruah rejected lekula, that it can be even thicker than a tefach, the lechadchila, the Ritva rejects it even, lechumra, that it should try to be thinner. Shulchan Aruch accepts that middle position, that we accept it, that tefach is our limit, but lechadchila, maybe you want to make it thinner, to avoid chametz problems. Okay, so that is the so that's what we have. And again, we know that the history of it is that nobody has thick matzos, right? Even the temani matzos, which are soft, are not particularly thick. They're not 3 inches thick, right? They're lafas. That's what they are, right? They're whatever it is, a centimeter thick. And the minhag ha'olam Ashkenazim or Sfaradim is to make it thin. Some places make it thicker, but even the soft matzah, that I've seen, it's lafa-like, and it's like a thinnish lafa. It's not, it may be soft, but it's thin. Okay, fine. So that's all regard to Pesach. So we've seen the limitations both in terms of quantity of kneading, and we've seen this question of thick, thin, blah blah blah, and the soft hard implications of the thick thin machlokas. The last thing here is this is the lechem apanim, right? The Gemara had brought this whole discussion up for the lechem apanim. So what exactly did the lechem apanim look like, right? That seems to be the question that it begs here. So I gave you just one paragraph out of a shorter article, but he has multiple articles on this, which each are 50 pages long. As I said, if you're interested in it, you can see all the experiments he did, all the different types of flour he did, the gluten content, how much beta amylase, all types of different chemical things that I don't know what's going on. He gives you down to the milligram. You can see exactly what he did, what temperatures he baked it at, how he did it to try to make the lechem apanim. I give the guy credit, right? When Mashiach comes, I will call him. He can make the lechem apanim. I don't understand. I can't bake anything. I have never successfully baked anything except for like cheesecake, which is, a bit different. I can cook, I can't bake, I can't follow the details, I can't do it. But I gave you the link, if you're interested, to make it at home. But this is what he writes, right? What did it look like? All we know here is that it was a tefach. So what does it look like? So he says, Lechem aponim nefek amur kematzah. It was made as a matzah. Klomar lo seor. What does that mean? Without, right? Without, seor is not really yeast, but let's call it yeast. It's not really yeast, it's sourdough, right? It's old school yeast, right? It's naturally harvested yeast. Have you ever made that? Ever done this? Okay. If you want to do an experiment for Pesach, I did this last year, and I did it for a science and Torah night at Ntivot. Okay. Why is chametz called chametz? Simple pshat, right? Because traditionally, the way you made chametz, how you made things rise, was not, we didn't have, yeast like we had. You had to get it naturally. How do you get yeast naturally? You make sourdough, right? The way you make sourdough is you take flour and water and you mix them up rigorously, and you leave it in a warm space overnight. And then the next day you throw out half of it and you add more flour, and then you do that the same the next night and the next night, and slowly the yeast in the air, right, each time you mix it, the yeast in the air gets in and starts to digest the flour, the gluten, and it starts to liquefy, right? And it starts to turn, and you'll see that there's going to be this thin, clear liquid, starts like film forms on the top. It looks and smells like vinegar, right? And that's sourdough starter. If you ever want to make real sourdough bread, that's how you do this, right? And then if you want to make it strong, so you let this keep going for about 2 weeks, right? And then you make sourdough bread, right? Real good sourdough bakeries leave their starter for years, right? It's the same starter that they keep feeding for decades, right? It's, 70, 80, 90 years old. Like, they have it passed on to the family. They it's insured, and, like, they have people watch it when they travel. So that's what they use. But you don't put that, obviously, in the things I'll do sometimes to understand sugya is my chavrus and I did this at some point because we were during challah, so then I did it again. So not only did it, on the one hand it didn't have yeast, but on the other hand it was thick. Adshir tefach. B'nisuyim shal achonat lechem ava. B'nigud l'mata modernit hadaka. Misolet durem. So when he tried to do this, all right, make thick bread with old school flour, right? Not our flour, but try to recreate the flour they had. Lo shmarim, lo kol tosficha acher, right? With no baking soda, with no, right? No nothing, just whatever they had. Hitbarer shemitkabel mutzar nuksha bioter. So he said, what does it come out with? It's not hard and it's not soft. It's like, you know, it's nuksha. It's like a hard-ish, right? Shkimat lo nitan lachlo ksheno tari lagamre. It's like not quite hard, but it's just hard enough that if it's not fresh, it's inedible, right? It's like a thick, edible cracker, like not quite hard, but not really soft, which gives you an understanding of why do Chazal say that the lechem apanim had to be, you know, steaming hot, right? So it's not just because it tastes better fresh. It was because the thickness of it and the fact that the way you make it is not actually soft. It's not a thin bread. It's like you're trying to make a yeastless, baking soda-less whole wheat, right? Remember, it is a whole wheat bread, 3-inch thick lafa-ish thing. It becomes hard, right? It's not quite hard. It's not a pretzel, right? But it's not, you know, fluffy. Right? It's like, have you ever tried making barley bread? Right? It's sort of, like, just flat. It's just, like, thick. It's barely edible. Right? Like, barley bread, when you find barley bread recipes online, usually what they are is, like, 80% wheat flour with a little bit of barley flour mixed in. Because pure barley flour, it sort of sits and sinks, and it's thick, and it's barely edible. So you make this thing without anything to make it fluffy, that's what it is, right? It's this thick, edible cracker. And that's why when Chazal say it had to be steaming hot, it's because that was the only way it was edible. Hak tchunazu kayemet gam balechem losar shchon mikemach chitim chitas halechem. Achu mashmoti biyoter mikemach shol mikhitim duram shu b'tchunato b'sisit mugbal yoter b'tzichatau. And he said, this is, you can get this type of consistency even with our wheat flour, but their wheat flour, which is, you know, durum wheat, which is, again, it rises less even than our wheat flour. This is the consistency he gets. So that's what he thinks we're talking about. This thick, right, with all his experiments, I'll take his word for it, the lechem apanim is a thick, edible, almost hard, cracker-like tefach thing. I can't imagine what that looks like. If anyone wants to follow his instructions and bake it and bring it in for show and tell next week, please do. I don't even understand what he's talking about, but okay. L'or totzazu, based on all of our experiments, hinachno sheyesh laosif tosef havacha kishul kolshu liisa. So based on this, he decided he wanted to put, you know, some baking soda or something in just to make it edible. Hanachah who's hit basasa gamal nitocha mekorit hamekorot atikim shak skubas afiat lechem emolash nasat shimush b'neter kemtiat vacha chilufilas orban osaflo. He said, so once he first made this, he realized that maybe even the lechem apanim did have some sort of baking soda, because apparently in the ancient world they did have some sort of non-yeast-based rising agent. So he added a little bit of this, which is sort of like baking soda. The haneter hugdar bekerav kidmonenu v'gam bekerav hakimaim b'yamenu kemin melach. It's sort of like a, you know, it used to be classified as like a salt. V'ulayish chalo b'munach melach neskar b'torah. Maybe that's what salt means. Right, he said it is sort of salty, right? If you ever have baking powder, right, it has a little bit of a salty taste, and right, that's why if you ever have to, you don't have enough baking soda and you put in baking powder, you have to minimize the amount of salt that you put in the recipe, because otherwise it tastes too salty. So these rising agents are sort of salty. So what he says is maybe, right, the first attempt that he made it became this sort of inedible cracker, right? Barely edible cracker. So that was on the assumption that there was no rising agent. But he said, maybe when the Torah says you put melach, right, you have a brit melach, you have melach in it, maybe it didn't really mean salt. Maybe, right, in the ancient world, right, baking powder-esque things were also considered salt because they have a salty taste to them. So So maybe that was what it meant. So he tried attempt two, right? He made it with a little bit of this, you know, baking soda, baking powder-esque thing. Rabbi Chiyov lo zol chokam anav mikdash. So early tzayin, shekayem an ayom machloket em mutar lo sif melech umachal. Limatza. Now there is a machlokes, right? Halachol ma'isa, whether you're allowed to put salt in our matza. Das chachmei Ashkenaz lasor, Ashkenazim say it's also. But das chachmei Svardim, Rishonim lahatir, and Svardim say it's fine. And Yehudei Teiman, al pi avanatam in the Rambam, nagu kiminag kanmon lo sif melech lishon ha-matza lechatchila. He said he bases this notion that you're allowed to put like the salt or this baking soda into the lechem aponim on the teimanim minhag, because the teimanim, following the Rambam, lechatchila put salt in their matzah when they're baking it. So following the teimanim minhag, he assumed that maybe lechem aponim also has salt, baking soda, whatever. B'malach ha'nisuyim asafnu soda u'melach machal u'salot. So we added baking soda and a little bit of salt. V'achein ha'isa shehitkabla tivcha heitev. And then it did sort of rise a bit. V'ader chomrei atvachaya hitkabel kamur lechem kasheh biyoter uval mirkam tzafuv she'ino achil. Right, because before it had been barely edible, and now it was a bit softer, a bit fluffier. Not really fluffy, but fluffier. Nitan lekabel lechem. You can get it to sort of fluff up with just salt and baking soda, which is true, right? If you want to make, like rice bread or something like that, which has no gluten, so it really doesn't rise very well, or you want to make a barley bread, which doesn't naturally rise. So if you want to make it somewhat fluffy without adding wheat flour to it, what you do is you just pour a tremendous amount of baking soda into it and hope for the best. So that's what he basically did, right? He poured baking soda in. This I did figure out because I eventually made the, right? I didn't just make the starter. I actually made sourdough bread. I take it back. That's the only thing I've ever baked. Now that I remember it. Now I have made it. The first one didn't work so well. The second one did. I made real sourdough and the Nitzivot kids were brave enough to try it. It wasn't bad. So, right, you can do this. Of course, that was had a lot of, that had actual yeast in it. You put 1-2% of the amount of flour of the baking soda and salt. V'achanat lechem standardi midubar b'kafit echad l'shnei kosot kemach b'sidran l'nisuyim ishtamashnu b'tosfei afiyah b'shur shel 1.5%, right? Biyachav lekamura kolot shemarkevei yisavi merkaziyim solot mayim. If you're following this, great. Hashimush b'soda manikal lechem tam levai ofyani. Now it does give it a bit of a aftertaste, right? A little bit of salty taste. L'chein yishlizer lo lafriz bekamut shel tosfei afiyah al leila. So don't put too much baking soda. Tam levai zemit pogei b'chelko l'achar tshavua. And the taste only goes away after a week. Lo nireshet am levai hu gorei makev. That's not necessarily terrible. V'adai lo kasher medubar v'lechem shcholek. And for sure, no one really ate that much of the lechem aponim anyway, so maybe it didn't taste so bad, who knows. And he says, by the way, no one ever said that the lechem aponim tasted good, it just said it was fresh. The Kohanim liked it because it was a miracle and it represented the relationship with God. So his conclusion is that either, right, the lechem aponim, I had no salt, no baking soda, whatever, and it was this almost inedible cracker, which is not quite hard, but not really soft either. Alternatively, they added baking soda, baking powder, or something like that with salt, which does the equivalent of what yeast does, but it's not quite as good as yeast. He said, if it's that, then it will be softer. It will be more like a tefach thick, sort of a, lafa-y bread. But he notes, what you gain in consistency, you lose in taste. So there's two possibilities in the end of what a lechem aponim looked like. It was clearly about a tefach thick, that's what the Gemara says. But it was either this thick, barely edible cracker, which is only edible when it's still hot, which is why Chazal say it has to be, the miracle was that it remained warm, or it was this softer thing with a tremendous amount of baking soda-like things, which tasted weird and salty, in which case it just didn't taste good. But it was soft. So those are your options based on his experiments. I can't tell you whether he's right or wrong, but he is the world expert on lechem aponim, and that's what he gets from our sugya, is that in order to get this consistency. At a tefach, you have those two options, right? That it's a hard, almost inedible cracker, or that it's this soft-ish thing which tastes bad. Okay, I don't know if this is true, but that seems to be what Yotze from our sugya, both the Pesach stuff and the Lacham Apanim stuff. So next week, then we will. Right. I know, that's what I always wanted to think. But this is
It sounded like it was something that when they went and said, oh, no, we have like the halls we get on Shal Shuda.
Right, so that's what he says, that it was. I can't promise you it's right. Maybe they had some magical thing and it tasted good and it was soft, and I have no idea. But as he notes, right, I mean, remember, Lacham Apanim aren't chametz, right? They're not chametz, right? Only the Shnei Lechem is chametz. Lacham Apanim aren't chametz. It's clearly not a, you know, warm, fluffy bread. If it's both matzah and it's, you know, a tefach thick. So again, these are your options, right? It didn't rise so much, so it's definitely not a fluffy bread. So either it's hard and, you know, hard-ish, or it's soft, but it's still going to be, you know, I mean, think about it, right? You know, if you add a tremendous amount of baking soda, baking powder to a laffa, you know. Anyways, I thought it was interesting to try to figure out what Lacham Apanim is. You can read the whole article. I didn't fully understand all the ins and outs of what he was using. I trust him that he tried it with the type of flour that they had and did all the experiments, and that's what he got. But what it means is beyond me. Okay, so that is that.